It's time for Caffeinated Comics, a lively discussion and debate on comics, film, television, and collectibles, all fueled by the magic of Frappuccinos. Caffeinated Comics is sponsored by Chimeras Comics. Chimeras is your one stop for comic books, graphic novels, hero clicks, Magic the Gathering, and more. Explore the fantastic at Chimeras Comics. And now, here's your hosts, John and Steven.
Thank you. It is Caffeinated Comics. I am your host, John Clark. With me, as always, is my co-host,
Steven Brown.
And today is Geek Pride Day, at least when we're recording this. I would say I'm more of a superhero geek than a comic book geek, because I don't really care whether it's action figures or whether it's comics or whether it's a movie.
Right.
Like, I just love Iron Man. I just love Batman. And that's kind of the one side of myself. And then the other side of me is music. The other side of me is classic rock, guitars, amps, effects. And the more I thought about that, the more I thought about how deep that goes. And in a lot of ways, it goes just as deep as comics and the collector mentality. So our guest today to talk about that is a longtime geek, but is also an instructor at Stone Grove Guitars. So welcome, Kevin Ryan.
Good morning.
I remember when I was in high school and I got really into Led Zeppelin and I bought all of their albums. And then I found out that there was this four-disc box set that had everything, but it included one song that wasn't on any of the albums. So I went out and bought that fucking box set.
Yeah, just four discs to get one
four
song.
Four discs to get, hey,
Hey,
hey, what can I do?
Hey, hey, what can I do? It's a classic. It's one of my favorites.
Song. Yeah.
And then probably when I was in college, when this is when Napster was still free and there was a lot of file sharing, I started finding Jimi Hendrix live shows and I started collecting all of them. And if you saw, I can show you, I have legitimately probably about 7 days without repeats of just Jimi Hendrix.
So like 10
days. That's crazy.
Yeah.
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 And they're the same songs because they're just different nights from the same tour.
Yeah. I have, it's called Black Gold. It's like five discs of him recording Electric Ladyland and like 28 minutes of Voodoo Child. As far as U2 goes, I remember when I was in high school, they released their greatest hits album, but there was a special edition that had a bunch of B-sides.
Oh, yeah. I had that.
Including.
I bought that just for the B-sides because I had all the albums anyway.
Because that cover of Unchained Melody is one of the best covers I've ever heard.
Yeah. Everlasting Love is a great cover.
Right before it, right?
Yep. Yeah. It's like this block of covers in the middle.
Yeah. And they're all great.
Yeah. That's something that's interesting is at what point comics, I think people obviously get into a lot earlier. It's very accessible. It's like a kid you get into comics. But then at what point is like, do you start be aware of like music and different musicians and different bands? And then it's like, oh, no, I'm going to start playing guitar. I'm going to start playing the drums.
For me, when I was a kid, it was The Muppet Show.
The Muppet Show
would play Beatles songs. The Muppet Show would play like Harry Nilsson songs. And they would play Roger Miller songs. And John
Sesame
Cash.
Street, right?
Yeah, Sesame Street too, because Sesame Street was original music with like Joe Raposo and like jazz session guys. I always said The Muppet Show got me both into comedy and music in one shot.
Yeah.
Like, since then, I was always interested. Like, Steve Martin would come on The Muppet Show, and I'd be fascinated. And then the next week, Johnny Cash would come on The Muppet Show, and I'd be just as fascinated. But as you do get older, then you start to realize, okay, who are these guys? Who are these guys? The same way with comics.
Figure out who pencilers and inkers and writers are.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. You move a little beyond the characters and say, okay, well, who's responsible for this? Because you get to an age where you're like, I've read some great Spider-Man stories. I've read some bad Spider-Man stories. Why is that?
Yeah.
And then you start paying attention to who's doing it.
Right.
And I think that's a thing that goes into music.
That's actually why I got out of comic books. Was, I want to say this was probably my freshman or sophomore year in high school. The X-Men storyline was the Phalanx?
Oh, that sounds...
Oh, yeah. And that's mid-90s.
Mm-hmm.
I was working in a comic store then. I remember all the hologram covers.
Stuff. And
that's like, Steven's already turning red, just 90s X-Men.
Because anything in the 90s, man, just burn it all down.
It was brutal because looking at the figures, looking at the characters in the figure drawing, it's like now their nose takes up like half their face.
Yeah.
And the stories are just so dumb. They started Generation X with Banshee and the White Queen in charge of a group of kids. But it was really, it was to go against Image Comics Gen 13.
Oh, yeah. So they were, it was, what book can we do that's just like that, you know?
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah, Gen 13 was the breaking point for me for the 90s, because you had that first wave of Image, which wasn't great, but it was like, at least it was the founders, and it was like, this is the character I've always wanted to put out. So I'm like, all right, I want to know who the Savage Dragon is. I want to know who Spawn is. I'll look at the Wildcats.
Yeah.
Max was probably the best thing that came out of that era.
Really? The Max?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Really? Was that good? Stu loves it, but I've never...
It's actually...
It's really moody. I mean, it's very Sam Keith. I mean, if you look at his modern Batman stuff, or even his original Sandman stuff, it's very shadowy, very long, very lean. The story was hard to understand, but it was kind of built around a mystery, and it was kind of surreal anyway.
Yeah.
I remember there was an issue of Gen 13 going along with what we were talking about the music and guitars thing. I think it was an early issue of it, and one of the members of Gen 13 played guitar.
I remember that, yeah.
And
I think his name was Grunge. Didn't they name a guy Grunge?
There was a guy named Grunge.
Isn't that when they invented Grunge? Was like the late 80s, early 90s?
Yeah. Early 90s, yeah.
Yeah, but there was a guy who...
That character did not invent Grunge.
No, he didn't.
So they had, in this issue, they had, the big bad guy come and attack the mansion, exactly like X-Men.
Right.
And then Professor X, who can walk with hair, tells...
Well, the hair lets him walk.
Right.
Tells this guy who plays guitar, he's like, go inside, get your guitar and your amp, we're gonna take this guy. And it was with the sound of him playing guitar so loud that destroyed the bad guy.
Yeah,
and he was like, so Claw.
I thought that was awesome. I was like, oh, like, and
that is that what got you into guitar?
Kind of did.
Yeah,
it actually kind of did. And they had a lot of kind of topical references in Gen 13. I mean, I look at it now, and it's just such a stupid story, and it's just ridiculous. Yeah, it's
probably incredibly dated now, too.
But they had a lot of topical references in there, like talking about, porno for pyros and Jane's Addiction and, other stuff. And I was like, oh, who are they talking about? And I went and, looked into it, and that was really when I started to discover music outside of what my siblings were listening to.
Yeah.
When I was 13, it was the first birthday that I was allowed to take the day off. And my mom had got me the Beatles Red and Blue albums, like 1962 to 1966, 1967 to 70. And all I did that whole day was just sit at home, and I got them on vinyl.
Yeah.
It's still the 80s. They're not original, but I would just listen to them on vinyl. I listened to them straight through the entire day, and my subscriptions came that day. And there was like an Amazing Spider-Man where he fought the Sinister Syndicate. And I remember that was like one of the first times there was this blending of comics, and I'm reading comics while listening to music, and I'm getting both.
Yeah,
and
I remember with the headphones on.
Yep. And then a couple of years later, another birthday, I remember I got money to go to the mall, and I bought Are You Experienced and the newest issue of The Flash. And those two are always entwined in my head.
Yeah, it's like that, you lock them together.
Yeah, reading The Flash with Jimi Hendrix, which makes sense in some ways.
I was going to say, that sounds...
makes perfect sense.
Yeah, so sometimes the music can become a soundtrack to the comics, which have no sound.
Yeah, because you kind of set your own pace as you're reading.
Mm-hmm.
So even though there are artists who try to create that frenetic pace within a comic book, that's still on you because you're reading it. So when you have music going, if you're listening to AC/DC when you read Iron Man, it moves.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's going to go a lot quicker.
You're just enhancing the mood. Yeah.
Quicker.
Here's a question that we've got a black hole of comics in the 90s where it's like very few good things are coming out. Mm-hmm. And I don't know anything about music. Does this happen in music where there's just like a whole decade? It's like a black smear.
Yes. Everything after 1995.
Yep.
Right.
Basically when that, basically the two things that killed music, in my opinion, and this may be me being old, but when Kurt Cobain died, grunge just stopped. I mean, the bands that were established put out some albums, and there are some good albums. Soundgarden existed for a little while longer. Pearl Jam never broke up, but they started to become less and less relevant. And then 5 years after that, Napster happens, and that kills the music industry, where music isn't pushed anymore. And now you've got to go and find it out. Now you got to go.
It's work now. No one cares.
Like when Octoon Baby came out. Remember that?
That was huge. And Octoon Baby came out right on the tails of Use Your Illusion 1 and 2.
Yep.
And then Nevermind broke, a Blood Sugar Sex Magic, a Pearl Jam 10. 91 was just this, it was this watershed year. It was like 1967. And at the time, I was 19. And I was in a band. And, you know, when you're 19 and in a band, you go, oh, the next one's me.
Yeah.
You know, but everything was great. Alice in Chains was around. I mean, because grunge had broke and all the established bands were putting out good records. Unlawful Carnal Knowledge is a great record.
Yep.
Metallica Black came out that year. Prince put out Diamonds and Pearls. It was like everybody put out everybody who was good put out a great record in 1991.
Yeah.
I remember because back then MTV used to play music.
Yeah, and, yeah, I remember.
Do you remember that?
I do. I remember because we'd always want to see, I'm very visual, and I don't know anything about music, but I'd always want to watch MTV and be like, well, what's the music video for this look like? And then how does it line up with, like, the lyrics and everything? And then now MTV's like, I don't even know what's like, is that like Snooki? Is that where she lives? Is that like
a thing? But it's all reality shows.
That's what I'm saying. It's like reality shows.
The thing now is bands still make music videos is that they make no money, so they basically shoot them with digital cameras on their own. Yep. So they're always just shots of the band.
Yeah, I look them up on YouTube now.
That's where they go. They all go to YouTube.
Yeah.
They're, you know, no one's going to play them on TV. MTV doesn't play them. VH1 doesn't play them. VH1 Classic. VH1 Classic plays videos from the 80s.
Yeah.
But you make a new video, nobody's going to play it, but you put it on YouTube.
Yeah.
And maybe you'll get some hits. But you know what? You're competing with me animating action figures on YouTube. You're competing with everything.
And videos of cats.
Yeah, there's just not the focus on music that there was from the 60s to the 90s.
Yeah, and you really think it was just like Kurt Cobain died and then digitizing music.
I think
and
Kurt Cobain killed rock. I mean, there were still R&B. I mean, like TLC was huge or like rap was still really big. But I think Napster killed the rest.
Regarding the Napster thing, that was right when, like I said, I was in college. We had a very fast internet connection, and you could download whatever the hell you wanted for free. And a lot of bands had a big problem with that because then people weren't buying their records. But that was like Metallica being really pissed about it. If you remember right before that, shortly before that, people were accusing Metallica of being sellouts.
Right.
And then that really nailed it home.
Yeah.
Yeah, because Metallica in the 80s was a pretty indie band. They're, you know, if you listen to those early records, which are phenomenal, those songs are 8 minutes.
Yep.
They're like super fast. They were creating like speed and thrash metal.
Yep. Yeah.
And they were impenetrable if you weren't into it. All my friends were into it in high school. I couldn't get into them till college because like I was just shoved out when I heard that music. And I was like, oh, I'm just going to go back and listen to The Who again.
Yeah.
I was like, I can't take this.
Along that same line, I remember a couple of my buddies in high school were really pissed off at Metallica. Because they released something, it was something like a suitcase with 4 VHS tapes in it.
Yeah, when you could sell VHS tapes to people.
And they said, you need to have this. This is like limited edition, you know, special collectible Metallica, whatever. And my buddies went and bought it, and they opened up the case, and the 4 VHS tapes were things that they had already owned. So So all they were buying was this stupid trunk that said Metallica on it.
It's kind of like the Avengers set now, which has all the movies
we already own.
Tesseract. But they tell you that up front. They're like, look, it's all the DVDs, but it's a really cool package if you want it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think Dave Redfield has it.
Yeah,
and
it's awesome.
It's awesome, but I looked at it and went, yeah, I have all these movies. I don't need to buy it. If they went, you need to buy this Avengers case and it's totally exclusive and nobody said what was in it,
you would have gone nuts.
I'm sure you would have gone nuts.
Yeah.
I would have gone crazy.
And then opened it and it was the Hulk and Iron Man and Captain America.
I'd be pissed.
Yeah.
Same thing.
It's the same thing. And that's an interesting thing is that music used to be marketed the way superheroes are now.
Yep.
Like superheroes really occupy that space.
Right.
Comics really learned from music. Nobody wants to repeat the disaster that happened in music.
Yeah.
Is that comics went, okay, oh, there's an iPad. Let's figure out a way to make an app to make it easy for people.
They incorporate themselves into the process as it comes out.
Yeah, and
you know,
there's BitTorrent where people are taking the newest issue, putting it on a scanner and handing it up for free. But Comixology is doing well. They're not, you know, they're not taking the hit that the music industry took.
But that's the same thing that happened. When Napster was free, more records sold.
Yeah.
And it just wasn't those same bands. Because the thing was, I know that I was one of the bigger demographics of the age group who was using Napster all the time. And because you have these, you know, 18 to 22-year-old college kids.
Yeah.
And that was when I learned about this band called Dispatch. And they have always been one of my favorite groups. And they, you know, they pushed for Napster to remain free. and they're an independent band. They never got stuck into a mold, and they kind of broke out of it. They sold out shows. They sold out Madison Square Garden. Wow. 3 days in a row.
That's crazy.
As a benefit for Zimbabwe.
So they were using Napster as promotion, basically.
Right, but the way that everybody heard about Napster is, or I'm sorry, about Dispatch is the same way that you two are hearing about them from me. You had someone tell you about them.
Right.
Yeah.
That's how you learned, that's how people learned about John Mayer and Jack Johnson back in 2001, was word of mouth, find the music, listen to it. If you like it, if it's worth your time, you'll spend the money to support the artist. So that was really what Napster did for me, was it was almost kind of a purification of music, because you would listen, you would get all this music for free, but you would still spend the money through the band's website. Because then what happens is you hear all these stories about record companies screwing over musicians. So
yeah, because bands would usually get about 98 cents on every CD.
So
wow.
So what happened was a lot of bands start their own record label, make their music available on their website, and who needs the record company anymore?
Yeah.
And that's really what happened.
Right. But I think what we learned, the one thing you really need the record company for is mass promotion, because unless you already have your following, it's tough to break through the clutter.
Yeah.
But that is interesting, is that we've kind of gone back to this kind of used record store model mentally, is that you hear about a band, you hear about them on YouTube, somebody tells you about it, and then you go and you hunt them down. You go and you Wikipedia them, and then you find where they're touring. You find out which albums are the big ones, where the one song, what album that's on, then you go to iTunes and buy it.
Yeah.
You know, it is more, it's very active. It's not what it was, where there was the mass promotion of you need to buy the TLC album and you can't get away from it, because they don't have those dollars to spend on marketing anymore. So it is all on the band.
I remember, this is probably, and I know you're a big Who fan, so I know you'll remember this, it was around the time when the Jimmy Page and the Black Crowes album came out. Mm-hmm. You ever heard that?
Mm-mm.
Jimmy Page went on tour with the Black Crowes. I saw it. It was awesome, but that's not what
I heard the CD.
About.
I never saw it. And the Black Crowes played Led Zeppelin songs.
Well, going to see the poster on the wall for me was just, you know, I mean, if you watch Jimmy Page play guitar and you don't want to play guitar, there's something wrong with you.
Man, you're doing it wrong.
But
later we'll show Steven some Jimmy Page playing guitar and see what happens.
All right, see what happens.
At the same time, The Who released a live album. This is, I want to say, 2002 or 2003. The Who released a live album where you could go on the website to order the double disc CD, but you could pick what songs you wanted.
So you can make your own set list.
Yes.
That's crazy.
I didn't hear about that.
It was all live. Mm-hmm. It was all from the same show. But if like you really hated Happy Jack, you didn't have to put it on there. And they would mail you your CD and you could put the songs in whatever order you wanted.
So it's like an early version of iTunes.
Right.
Like directly from them.
So wow. if you were like really pissed off that they opened with My Generation instead of closing with it, you just put it at the end.
Yeah.
Wow.
And they did the same thing with the Jimmy Page and the Black Crowes live at the Greek. And I thought that was just a really neat thing. Like, why do you have to buy the whole album if you don't like all the songs?
Yeah. My favorite thing that any band did was when Radiohead put out In Rainbows.
Uh-huh.
And they,
that was the pay what you want for it, right?
Yeah. Pay whatever you want. And I gave him $5 and got it. And In Rainbows is one of their best albums ever.
Yeah.
It's much better than, I'm not crazy about the new album, to be honest. And the one before was kind of hard to get into. But that album was fantastic. And it was like, and they were kind of sending the message. This is when BitTorrenting, it was like towards the end of Napster. Napster basically became BitTorrent, which technologically meant, Napster, you got song by song. You went on Amazon and you said, oh, there's 12 songs on this album. Then you went on Napster and you wrote in each one of those songs and you downloaded each one of those songs. Then when high-speed internet became more of a reality, all of a sudden there's BitTorrent, where you went from getting every song to getting their discography.
Yep.
Yeah.
You know, it was like, here's every single B.B. King record. Here's all the live albums. Here's all the B-sides. And it's 3 gigs.
Yeah.
And you can have it in about an hour.
Yep.
You know, and I got things that I've never listened to. You know, like, I'm like, oh, I kind of like Dio. And I would download every single Dio record. Yeah. There's some I haven't gotten to in 10 years.
You know, it's funny that you bring up downloading discographies and not listening to all of them, because really what you're doing is you're filling vacancies or filling holes.
And that's where it's like comics.
Exactly. Because when I started reading comics, it was strange because the first issue I ever got was X-Men number one and Uncanny X-Men number 281. So it was when the team split. So you really had two very different writers and everything and two different stories happening. And then it's funny because when I got my first guitar, I had this sound in my head of what I wanted it to sound like. And then, so I got my first Strat and making it sound like Stevie Ray Vaughan, and I'm making it sound like Jimi Hendrix. And then you listen to the Blues Breakers record, which is a Les Paul through a Marshall. So then I wanted a Les Paul.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not like the Les Paul's replacing the Strat. It's not like, you know, anything is happening really where I'm not going to play the Strat anymore. I'm still going to play that, but now I have this.
Right, two different sounds, two completely different sounds,
yeah. Which is, to me, it's like different storylines. And because what you're trying to do, and, you know, if you've seen John's pedal board, you'll see what any guitar player is trying to do is to get the sound in their head out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So,
and that sound can change from song to song.
Right.
Absolutely. And, you know, years later, I wanted a Telecaster. So I was Les Paul and Strat guy forever. And then I wanted a Telecaster because I started listening to this great blues guy named Robin Ford. And he plays a Tele. I wanted that sound.
Yeah.
So then I wanted a semi-hollow body. And so I got one. And so now I have five.
You just got that one.
Yeah.
That's your newest one.
And I got the SG a year ago. So I have five guitars that are all used for very different purposes.
Yeah.
Like, wow. I have one that's open tuned. I just play slide on it. And I have another one that.
And open tuned, so you means you're tuning the strings differently. So
okay.
You can't play it normally. You have to play it completely differently because now the strings are all different notes than they used to be.
So when you strum the open strings, you get a chord instead of having to do anything.
Okay.
Yeah. So if you play it normally, you're playing an E, and then you're changing the notes on all the strings. So now it might be a C sharp.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And because of that, you're using different, and it has a different sound to it. So notes are ringing together
completely different.
Yeah.
And for slide, that's helpful because you know with the slide, you just have this one glass that you're moving up and down.
So you make a chord.
Yeah.
So the chords need to be closer together than they used to be.
That's awesome.
And by the way, this is an excellent thing to be doing on the radio is us demonstrating with our hands.
Oh yeah, this is what
this is what you do.
No, because that's the thing is, like I said, I don't know anything about music, and no one in my house, even growing up, was super. I mean, listen to music and everything, but like my parents aren't crazy in enemies, didn't buy us Beatle albums or anything when we were kids. Like, it wasn't really till like high school, college where you start like you find those influences. And by that time, I think it was just like too late. It's just like something's not clicking. You know, it's like that's like one vacuum of knowledge. It's just like, I don't know how to play any instrument. You know, I don't know much about music. It's just like there's this like big wheelhouse of things that like people are really, really into that I just right over my head.
Yeah, I was like that with drawing. I used to draw a lot when I was a kid, and there was one kid in my class who was great at it, and I couldn't do what he did. And it was just like, and at one point I was just like, yeah, I'm done with this. And then when I wrote comics, I'd work next to artists and just look at what they were doing. I was like, I can't do any of that.
Yeah.
But I really believe that music is one of the most genetic of talents. Because you can see in little kids, like two or three, they either have rhythm and pitch, or they don't,
yeah.
You know, and I know some families don't, like my wife's family. None of them are musical. My family completely, on both sides. Everyone in my mother's side plays. I've been in bands with my uncles and cousins.
Yeah. Nobody in my family plays.
At all?
At all.
Really? In your extended family?
Yep.
Or a couple of generations back?
Nobody.
Wow.
You're
the first guy I know like that.
My dad doesn't even like music. See, when I got my first electric guitar, it was like you would have thought that my parents wanted me to go and talk to a pastor about it because it was like, what is this thing? Like, what are you playing? Like,
wow.
Yeah. So, yeah, that's crazy. It's like I said, I think my oldest sister had a guitar, and I only remember it when I was putting like Halloween decorations in the crawl space. I'm like, oh, there's that guitar Gina used to have.
Yeah, a lot of people are like that. I have a friend of mine who bought a guitar probably 8 years ago and said, I'm going to learn how to play this.
Never played.
Took lessons for a couple months. then stopped, and then every now and then it's like, I got to learn to play that, and then she'll pull it out and play it again. But you either have it or you don't. And I'm at the point now where Ben's six, which is, there's a lot of six-year-olds taking lessons at Stone Grove, right?
I've taught, you know, the thing is, and going along with what you said a minute ago, you know, I've taught people as young as six, but I've also taught people as old as 60.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's another thing is to, you know, never say can't.
Yeah, that's true. I guess.
Is it, you know, there are skills about playing music that can be learned.
Right.
Like I've had to teach rhythm to students who don't have it. You know, I've had to, you know, teach things that I take for granted, but that I had to learn too. I mean, that's why they call it a learning process instead of just learning now. Like, but you know, yeah, I mean, I've taught people as young as six or seven.
Yeah, well, my issue with him is the one thing I don't want him to do is push something on him that he doesn't like, because he won't practice. And if he doesn't practice, he's not going to learn. It's not about going to the lessons. It's about playing every day.
He's got to show the spark. That's the thing about him,
he is the most natural drummer I've ever seen at his age, because I have the drum set downstairs we have set up for band practice. Every time he gets back behind there, it's perfect. And then I ask him, I'm like, well, Ben, do you want to take drum lessons at Stone Grove? And he goes, no, I want to play the keyboard. And I'm like, I can't push him onto the drums because he will resent it and not play it. I took guitar lessons when I was eight, and the guy immediately just sat us all down and made us learn sheet music, and we were playing like melodies on like the 1-3-5, and I was like, this is boring.
Yeah, I've never taught people like that.
No, and I put it down for the next 7 years, and then when I was 15, I was like, oh, a D chord, a C chord, a G chord. Hey, I can play these five songs now.
Yeah.
And then since then I've played every day of my life for the last... I guess I started playing in 88, but, you know, 25 years.
Yeah.
You know, and I've never been intimidated by it. So one thing I've learned where I was never intimidated by it, I could listen to Jimi Hendrix and go, oh, he's much better than me, but I didn't want to put it down.
Yeah.
I mean, for me, it's as far as being a guitar player and being a musician, I think it's important to always evolve and to push yourself into trying new things and doing new things that might have scared the crap out of you before. Like, I listened to Jimi Hendrix when I was younger, and it was like, oh, that's insane. How does he make that sound? Now I listen to it like I could do that.
When I turned 30, Renee got me a Les Paul, because that's when they introduced the burst buckers. So they were clearancing out all the old ones that had the 490 pickups.
490 and 490.
Yeah, which were more, they were better for heavy metal, and then they introduced new pickups in it that sounded better for blues and rock. So they wanted to get rid of all of them. So I got one cheap at Guitar Center, and when I plugged that in, I was like, oh my God, this sounds like Jimmy Page. This sounds like early Clapton. And it didn't even occur to me that I could sound like that with that guitar. Mm-hmm. For me, it was always about the look and feel, and I was like, oh, Jimmy Page sounds like that because he's Jimmy Page. Mm-hmm. And I sound totally different because I'm not Jimmy Page. And then when I got that Les Paul, I was like, I kind of sound like Jimmy Page now.
That's awesome.
For me, it was Duane Allman when I got my Les Paul. The day after I bought, I have a 1958 historic Les Paul, which is cost about $2,500 in 2005.
Well, a good guitar will cost you at least $1,000.
Yeah.
This is made by the Gibson Custom Shop, too.
Yeah, so it's like a special order limited edition kind of thing.
At the time, it was like $500 more than a Les Paul standard. But the Les Pauls
are expensive to begin with.
The day after I got that guitar, I swapped out the pickups. And then 2 months later, I swapped them out again. Because that wasn't the sound I wanted. It wasn't the Les Paul sound that I had in my head.
Yeah.
And it's interesting. That kind of goes back to what we were talking about action figures. About how, I got to change the gloves on this guy because this
customized.
Is not right.
It's not the right one.
Yeah, you have something specific you're looking or listening for. And it's just like all the different things you can customize and change.
That's another part of it, like collecting. It's another bit of that obsession. I've done that. I've changed the pickups in almost every guitar I've ever owned because I was like, oh, it's so close to perfect. But the thing is, you can be on that search forever because it's very hard to know what, say, a pickup is going to sound like until you take your guitar apart, put the pickup in, use a soldering iron. Completely install it and then play
mess with the height and
adjust every little thing. You can be doing that for a day and then play it and go
and then it doesn't
work. $150
or how there's, you know, everybody knows how there's like Tube Screamer clones.
Yep,
it's this overdrive pedal which makes your amp think it's cranked.
Okay,
But, so it gets kind of like a raunchy rock sound without turning it all the way up.
Okay.
And like pushing the speakers too hard.
The holy grail of those things is the TS-808.
Yeah, this is why I love having Steven here, because Steven's just got this like wide-eyed look.
He's looking at me like, dude, you're kind of crazy.
What's the...
But also without Steven here, you and I would just be saying TS-808 and...
TS-9.
I'm the audience. I'm the audience.
And
500
capacitors, and people would have turned it off by now.
Right.
So there's countless people on the internet who you can send them your Tube Screamer and they will mod it for you to the 1980s specs.
Yeah.
So there's even, if you get it modded by this guy or if you get it modded by this
guy. There's like specific guys with specific reputations for doing it better.
My Line 6 modulation pedal I sent to Keeley.
Yep,
and
Robert Keeley.
A little bit. And a lot of those they go, and it gets down to the nitty gritty. It's like, this wiring in this pedal.
Yep.
It's not the way they did in the 70s because they don't make that wire anymore. But I got that wire. Yeah. And I'll put it in there for you for $150.
Yep. Transistors.
Does it change anything? Like a wire?
Yes. But really.
It doesn't. But to us, it does.
Because
it's neurotic. So
but someone in the audience is going to be like, his guitar is loud now. It's like, that sounds nice and crunchy. Like, they don't care about guitar tone.
Right.
Yeah. You know?
But you guys are like, the...
But you know what? It is the level of like, I can't buy this Amazing Spider-Man 50 in very fine. I need it in near mint.
Yeah.
It's that granular a level. But if you're at that level, it makes all the difference.
Right.
If we're going to talk about guitars at that granular level, we need to talk to Ron Zabrocki. Now, you may not have heard of Ron's name, but you've absolutely heard his guitar since he's been doing sessions on commercials and records of every genre for decades. He also runs a blog on GuitarWorld.com, which features videos and a lot of his experiences about being a session guitar player for his entire career. So let's ask him a few questions.
So, Ron, how many guitars do you have now?
Baskin-Robbins. 31 flavors. Literally.
Now, how many do you usually play in like a week?
Okay. Now this is not a plug. Okay, even though I endorse Line 6, but it really is seriously not a plug because the studio work. It's the Line 6, the JTV 89, because it models all these guitars really well. It's taken over. It's just taken over the studio. But there are about six in reality. There's about six that I eat that. Seven, whatever, six to seven. It could keep going up and up, but I do have six or seven favorites that I do play, during the week. So,
now, what are they? What are the six, seven?
Okay.
The Line 6 you mentioned, which is really the digital interface.
That's the one. It's just because it models all these guitars. So when I'm working on my sessions for all these people, if I need a Tele, I just turn to the Tele knob. If I need a Strat, I turn it into a Strat. I need a Les Paul. If I need a 12-string, it sounds like all these, too. I mean, it really does. It's completely insane. It really does work. So, and I'm not cutting corners. But with my other guitars, I got a 74 Strat. Remember the blue one I think you've seen?
Right, yeah, the custom paint job.
Yeah, I was stupid.
You know what? You made it more you. I think it's worth more because it's a Ron Zabrocki original.
It's disgusting, but
I recorded with that guitar.
I know it plays great still. I was just using it yesterday. I love it. I love that guitar, and I have another Strat, a Highway 1. That's a newer one. That I guess is about 3 or 4 years old with the big headstock, because I needed a big headstock.
Okay, now
we're talking about.
this gets me to my central question: why do we need a big headstock? Because
I have one answer.
Okay,
Richie Blackmore. It's horrible. I own too many guitars. I would get rid of them, but they're like kids at this point, you know? Oh, another reason. You want to hear another reason why I bought the new Highway 1 with the big headstock? It wasn't only Richie Blackmore, but the fact is the one I painted, the blue one, when I was just like 19 years old, and I decided, who needs this? You know, I don't want it to be, sunburst, so let's make it blue. So you can't take the paint off that guitar. I mean, it's like there's like 20 coats of like motorcycle paint
on it.
Yeah,
it's like car varnish.
And it used to look like my new one, so when it was new. So I got it to basically replace this one. You know what
that's
I mean?
Like, that's like adopting a child that looked like your kid at five.
The funny thing is when I play on a Strat, though, I have to work really hard to play good, but I like what I hear more. Like, the Rory Gallagher thing, Gallagher. His beat-up Strat, he's known for that one guitar. I would love that. Just have that one guitar and beat the fucking shit out of it. Just destroy the damn thing, play it until it just falls apart and dies. And then I look at the other ones and just sometimes you need another flavor, It's just, I don't know. It's It's a disease. It's something very wrong. It looks like I mugged Sam Ash, my studio, right now. It looks like literally I walked in there with, you know, a bunch of guys and just emptied it. It's horrible. But at least it's all paid for. So I got that going for me.
I feel like I've come to you for answers and I'm just forcing you to look at your own insecurities.
It's a problem. I know. It's like, you know, I get it, you know. But let me point one thing out, though. I have never seen even one Star Wars movie. Right,
but,
exactly.
But it's no, okay. That's not the most disgusting nerd story about you. The most disgusting nerd story about you is that you had an Amazing Fantasy 15 in your closet and just gave it away.
Yeah. Yeah, but I still have a lot. I just don't know what they are. I haven't opened them in probably 20 years.
They say on the cover what they are.
Well, I know there's like a number 4 Hulk and like something with Spider-Man and so, what's that, number 1 Superman? No, I don't have that. But, you know, I do have, well, like these things that I know comic book collectors would like just kill for. And I don't know why they're sitting in a closet. I think I'm waiting to move back to New York before I pull them out and probably sell them or something.
I disagree with that because you and I had this discussion in 1994 when you lived in New York. And you said you didn't know where that closet was.
Well, but I have them. We found them in the move.
Now, are these books you just bought off the rack or did somebody give them to you? Or were you into comics for a while?
No, my father probably bought them.
For himself?
Just for us, or you know, for me when I was a little kid, or whatever. Or when we were at the barber shop, literally Joe the Barber on Liberty Avenue. How's that for the old school?
Mm-hmm.
With the old barber pole outside. I remember he always had comic books in there, and we would, you know, he would let us take them home. So it was things like that. We would just, you know, just take whatever was in there. Didn't matter.
Yeah.
And we kept them for some reason. You know, as opposed to destroy, like, you know, I have baseball cards like you wouldn't believe. I don't know what to do with them.
Nobody knows what to do with baseball cards now.
Yeah, no. It's a like friend of mine babies. Actually just took them from me and put them all, organized them and put them in books and covered them and, you know, because he cares about all that stuff and I didn't.
But because you chose your path and that path was guitars.
It was, yeah. Now I have other problems. I collect microphones. Oh, my God. It's just horrible. I mean, how many microphones do I need? I don't even want to record anybody anymore, really. You know, I just want to do the guitar thing. So, you know, I'm doing pretty good with it. So it's working out. But, I mean, the last thing I want to do is, you know, have this mic collection from hell. And yet I hear it is, I go into a store shopping. And what do I see? I see all this gear and I go, have it. It's a problem.
That's exactly why we're having this discussion.
I know. Because
it's the same, it's the same feeling. Yeah.
It's a total geek thing. I get it. I mean, it's a disease. And you need to have like, really, God forbid you don't have like with me, like it could be the spaghetti writing on the Fender logo. You know what I mean?
You're at that point because I was going to suggest, you know, with you being a session guy, you want to have every single tool available. But if you're talking about different logos, that goes beyond.
Oh, sure. Yeah. No. I've gone to meetings. And I've obviously missed a few.
Yeah, apparently. Apparently they did no good at all.
No. The therapist, the hypnotist, and nothing worked. I spent thousands on it all. It doesn't make it. I've given up and yeah, I've accepted it. And I think everybody else should too. My wife too. Having Lori for my wife, I got to say something good about her. Maybe one day she'll actually listen to this. We'll see. But, you know, so I'm not just saying it. She might not hear this. But I whenever I go out and buy something, if I spend $2,500 on a microphone preamp or a guitar or whatever, we don't have kids, right? So that means she gets to go buy another lens, you know, a camera lens or another body for a camera or more lighting for her obsession, you know.
When was the last time that you drove into the city with your gear, set it up in a studio, played with a band there or at least with a producer behind a board? When did that stop?
That didn't totally stop yet. But,
so you're still doing that?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, 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 yeah. Yeah, yeah. That will never stop. I need that. As a matter of fact, I could have just done a session just now for this Latin artist who, you know, wants me to just do a classical guitar thing with just vocals. And he was going to come up here, and I said, no, we'll go to Spin in Astoria, a great studio, like one of those world-class places.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where he's recording the rest. I said, no, I'll drive there. Get me in that atmosphere again, you know, get me around some people, you know.
How many amps do you have?
I don't, you know what? Let me tell you something. Like, here's an amp right now, right? Right behind me, a Fender thing, you know?
Yeah.
I don't even, I haven't turned on an amp on a, I turned an amp on once in the past year and a half for recording. I have probably about six or seven right now, but I just use the modeling stuff, the Line 6, you know, the HD 500 things for recording because they sound great. They sound great. They really do. So it's like there's no, it's flexible. You don't have to. You stay in the creative mode. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I'm sitting here. I got the guitar wrapped around my head. I just turned some buttons, hit a button knob, and I got a whole new amp model, you know, happening. And it works. Believe me, not every amp, just because it has tubes in it, is a good amp or sounds good or records good. But somebody like recently wanted an old buddy of mine from he's down in Florida now, from Nashville, though, but doing like a Joe Walsh thing. And he really wanted a pure Joe Walsh sort of a tone thing. And Joe Walsh endorses Carvins and stuff, so I have this Carvin amp from the 80s and everything, and I plug that into a 412 cabinet, and there it goes, you know?
Yeah, so are you basically picking out what gear beforehand, before a session starts, or are you...
Yeah, oh yeah, yeah, when somebody, when I could tell what they, you know, what they want right away, if they ask for a certain, you know, you always get direction, you know what I mean? You always get like, okay, I want it to sound like, you know, Sears Silvertone, or you know, something like that, which I used to own, and I had two of them, and they blew up. Mm-hmm. Very sad, very sad. But we call them the sluts. They were just great, you know. Here's a real horrible fact about Sears. You know, Sears and Roebuck put out these amps called Silvertones, and at the time they didn't sell very well because when you turned them up, they distorted, you know, into this most beautiful creamy distortion, you know, but nobody wanted it at the time. Well, it's the geek thing once again, because I embrace technology. I embrace when things move ahead. So it's like, you know, I've used enough amps and enough guitars to know that, and tape, how's that tape? You know, there's all these purists that, oh, I can't record without tape because the sound sucks, you know? It's like, no. No, I've recorded on so many tape machines that blow, and then spent, you know, 15 minutes of tape costs you $150 or whatever. It's just a horrible, horrible. It's a rust based format. It's just gross. It's horrible. And no matter what anybody says, they're romanticizing because they never used it. You know, most of the people. It's like when people say, "Oh, don't go to France. It's horrible." Or "Don't go to India. It stinks there." You know what I mean? People talk like that. Half of those people never did it. You know what I mean? I lived through it. You know. When MIDI was invented, I was probably in the room. How's that? I might very easily have been there when the five families, it was like a mafia meeting, you know, Roland, Yamaha, whatever, when they all got together, and I was right there, you know, like, and like we used to tell people, with right now, technology moves so fast that, you know, it's still plenty of room on the bus for people to hop on, but it's just going by so fast that, you know, if the older guys that didn't get on it earlier aren't going, they can't get used to it, you know. They can't get a handle on it. They have to use an amp, and even me, sometimes you just got to plug into an amp and just play. But every time I do, I go, yeah, no, that kind of blows.
What drew you to the guitar initially?
Oh, this is a really boring story. It's great.
Yay! I will edit it out. Tell it.
I was in first grade, and they opened up a new school in town. Okay, it was actually called the Brooklyn Conservatory of Music. And they asked if anybody was interested in music lessons, and I did. And it led to some other crazy things in my life that are very, very unknown by most people. But I said, yeah, I want to play guitar. My brother said, I want to play accordion. Why? Accordion. God, I have no idea. You know, but they taught guitar and accordion and stuff like that. So I chose the guitar, and that was it, you know. But
what made you pick guitar? It just seemed better than accordion?
Yeah, way better.
Yeah, well, that's true.
Yeah, but then, you know, but once you get the smell of the bellows of an accordion, you know, they should bottle that, man. It's just amazing. But sticking with it was just something that I always liked. I was like, my father was, I think it came from my father, literally, because he was a killer piano player and didn't know how to play a note. He was like Nat King Cole playing piano, and he didn't know anything that he was doing. But it was a different time period then. Oh, God, it was horrible. You'd have to go digging for things. Like when I first heard like this like little thing, like, and then you hear that bend, you know?
Yep.
I didn't know he was bending a note. I thought it might be a pedal. I said, how's he getting that forced sound? And then it's like 10 years later, for some unknown reason, you're surrounded by, you know, $250,000 or more worth of gear, and you walk in and out, and you decide, and you go in there to meet friends, guys you've only read about who now became your friends or whatever, you know, in the industry that aren't household names, but people that, you know, that you were reading about in magazines, and now, you know, they're talking to you about different things because you're writing in magazines and, you know, whatever. It's like you just, wow, just one of those wow moments, just going, wow. You know, I remember being at the China Club once, and, like, there was Julian Lennon, me, alone right there is bad enough. But, yeah, no, John Waite, not Tom Waits, John Waite from the Babies, Julian Lennon, me, Eddie Martinez, I don't know, there were a couple of, like, big-name guys all standing around hanging, having a conversation, and I looked around. I really had to pause for a minute, look around and go, what the hell is wrong with this picture? And it was me, you know? It's like, what am I doing here, you know? It's like, you know, how did this happen, you know? And it's just cool. It's a badass thing, you know? So, and I still feel like that thing, like, you know, when you get on a plane with a guitar, there's nothing better, you know, because everybody thinks you're something special, you know? Yeah.
Now, how did this session work start?
Because Oh, that's, yeah.
So
yeah,
I'm guessing you were in bands in the 80s and...
Yeah, I was Token Black. I was Token White Boy in a lot of black things. What happened was, there was a studio, I don't know if you've ever heard of it, called Monkey Hill. Mm-hmm. And I ended up doing a recording there once for myself, you know, booking it out for myself just to record my own band thing. And they liked me. And they said, you know, and I ended up becoming friends with the owner, this guy Dennis Mann, and Latman. And he ended up calling me for a session or two here and there. And then once I met this, I got called to play on this thing called 1984. How's that for, you know? In 1984, it's called Big Brother. It's 84, whatever. And it was
very
for
subtle.
And it was for the Fatback Band. And you'd have to be a black person to even know who the Fatback Band was back then from Queens, you know? But they're still popular. I mean, but that was like one of those things. And after doing that, I started getting more and more calls to just play on different things. So just one thing leads to another. Just, you know, because they don't care how you play that day, they care what you already did. Mm hmm. How's that? You're never going to get called for what you did that day. They'd have to be, you know, Kreskin, you know? So you're only as good as your last session. So you just always got to try to be on, and, you know. And then, like I say, and then the geekier part about it is, like, guys, that they're the purists, but if you don't embrace the technology, everybody's looking for the next new sound. It's ear candy, you know? Mm-hmm. So they want to hear these things that the new technology can give, that the old technology just sounds like old technology, which is perfect and pure and beautiful, sure. But it's dull sounding also by today's standards.
Yeah, well, I've always said, if especially about purists that just want to hear tube amps and Fender and Gibson guitars, mm-hmm. I mean, that if that person was 50 years older, they would have hated the electric.
Oh, God, sure. Mm-hmm. Absolutely, you know, and the first time, remember when Dylan went electric?
No, people didn't like it.
Oh, God. Oh, God.
That's my favorite.
They must murdered him. I mean, really.
That's my favorite thing about Don't Look Back is they show footage of that, but it's in England, so they're all very polite. They're like, well, he started to play loud, and I just didn't like it.
Exactly.
That's like as angry as the crowd's got. It's like, yeah. Well, I liked it when in the beginning he had his acoustic guitar, and then he got very loud indeed, and our evening was ruined.
I almost spilled my tea. Yeah. That's the same thing, though. It was exactly right what you're talking about. It is. That's exactly what it is, though. People don't want to accept
change. And that happens all the time in comics. I mean, you know, you kill off a character, you have a new art style on something, or even what's happening now. I mean, we were seeing a digital revolution in comic books.
Is there a digital?
I
want to ask you a question before I forget this right now. But keep that digital thing in mind, because you will after this next question.
Okay.
Remember Tom Hanks in Big?
Right.
Remember with the chip and the comic book idea at the end of the movie?
Yeah, we just saw that. It was on, like, Easter.
Did they ever do anything like
that? We're getting to that. What they're doing now is they're sending comics directly to the iPad. And
oh, really?
So you're opening it up like a Kindle. But
right.
But they're adding features now where you can go panel by panel.
Do they have movement in them? Are there any, like, little mini movie things
there
happening?
There have been some. They haven't worked out as well. They have things called motion comics, which they've been putting out DVDs, where they're almost like cheap animation, but in CG.
Yeah.
Where kind of like the old 60s, where they would cut up the Kirby panels and move Iron Man's hand.
Yeah,
it's
sure.
Like that, but they're morphing the lips and,
you know,
the arm movements.
Yeah. Well, you know what? Yeah, I think that might cheapen it anyway, the art form.
Yeah, so people really want to see the static image and see the art as is, but they're looking more and more ways into doing it. And they're finding by
I guess 3D would work too pretty well.
Yeah. These are all things they've been looking at. But the big thing they found is that everybody was worried, oh, this is going to kill print, it's going to kill the comic book stores, and they've just tapped into a new audience who wasn't reading comics before. And now they're just – there's an app called Comixology, which is kind of like the iTunes for digital comics, and Marvel and DC both have their books there. And there are young readers now that will never go into a comic store, but they're reading Spider-Man every month just by clicking download.
Nice. Yeah, well, like I said,
that's where music has been for the last 10 years.
Oh, please. Yeah, at least that. Yeah. But like I say, with the comic books, what I was just thinking about, I never thought about this, but I think the staticness of it helps your imagination.
Yeah.
You know, you add the rest of it in, you know, the way you would see it, you know, not the way somebody else would see it. It was like reading a book. Gee.
Yeah. This is Scott McCloud wrote this really great book called Understanding Comics, and he said the brilliance of it is all the action takes place in between the panels.
Right.
You know, whenever you see a punch in a comic book, you never see the fist connect. You always see the guy flying back, and the other guy's like fist is down near the ground.
Sure.
Because it's always right after the moment happened.
Pow.
Yeah. Don't forget the word pow. It's very
important. Pow, bam. See, Batman.
How do you not know it's loud? So where do you see things going now? You're in the middle of this whole change. You've embraced it. As you say, you're playing a digital guitar most of the time.
Well, it's not a digital guitar. It's a real guitar. It's made by James Tyler, who makes like really $4,500 guitars. They're real guitars.
So
does
it basically just have a switching system that activates
It does is it'll play like a real guitar, and then you press a button, and it activates the modeling.
Now, is the modeling built into the guitar, or do you have to interface with the platform?
Nope. It models right into it, and you can just plug a regular guitar jack, or you can use a Variax thing, you know.
So it's kind of like in the 80s, the old MIDI guitars, where
there's no delay. But there's no delay. It's pure. It uses the piezo system, and each saddle on the bridge has its own little pickup, and that's where the technology comes in. So that's the modeling part. But you know, let's just say like it also runs on batteries for live if you want, and like it has a 12-hour battery life or something. So you know, you're probably never going to worry about that. But if it did die, the guitar still works great, just like a regular, really good high-end guitar.
So you could just plug it into an amp, even without the battery.
It still works. Yeah, still play. It'll still play just like a really good, really high-end guitar.
Yeah, so it's like the hybrid of guitar.
Yeah. But the models actually sound better than the guitar, I think, which is really funny. The guitar sounds great, but the models sound even better. So they modeled it, whatever they modeled it after, you know, it's like, you know, but no two Strats sound exactly alike. So, you know, this will give you the Strat, the essence, the spirit, the whatever, you know. But
this is the way things are going? You think you'll be working more and more digital?
No, I want to cut back. No, here's an interesting thing is happening. You know these top 40 lists or top 20 or top 10 lists? You ever make them for yourself? You read about them all the time?
Yeah, you made one on Sunday, and I answered it on my phone, and my phone crapped out.
There you go. You know, and as I was doing that, I realized that my heart lies in not in technology, but in music, right? That's 30 years old, at least, like from the 70s or 40 years old. Mostly from the 70s, some in the 80s. By the time I hit the 90s and 2000s, I had nothing to do with it, what I want to listen to. Because, you know, we all become our fathers, and it's just, you know, it's not like I don't like the music. As a matter of fact, if I'm going to be doing anything on guitar right now as a session player, I mean, I still am every day. But I want to cut back. But I mean, if I'm going to play on stuff, I'm probably going to ease more into the EDM thing, the electronic dance music. Because first of all, most of those guys are not musicians. They know nothing about music. Okay, so they don't know anything.
It's just programmed.
Yeah, a buddy of mine gave me a name for it, what he calls it, audio artists. You know, so maybe they'll use loops and they'll use whatevers, you know, to put things together. And, you know, I don't like it, but I don't hate it and I get it. And I'm not going to badmouth it because, hey, you know, everybody has this creative streak in themselves, you know. But they don't really have like a lot of live guitar playing in it and stuff like that. So, you know, I'm looking to actually move into, you know, playing on a lot more EDM right now.
Hmm.
So, yeah. So that's going to be fun. Because I'll get to, you know, really just, you know, get to use the technology, get to use, you know, crazy sounds and possibly overplay at points, you know, which is
is every guitarist's dream.
Well, you want to, but, you know, but because of the fact that they're not musicians, really, a lot of them, they're amazed at anything you do.
Right.
You see, and I hope they're all going to be listening to this and going, yeah, huh, you think so?
And then work dries up.
Exactly. It's gone. But I still have my clients, so I'm okay. But no, you know, seriously, they're amazed at anything you do. So they appreciate anything you do is what I'm saying, you know? So they just get shocked. Like, how are you doing that? How do you know what to do? Like, I studied. Gee, it's called music. It's a language. It can be taught. Try it out sometimes. Take a lesson. You know?
Yeah, that's the one thing I worry about with the digital revolution is that these next generations coming up, you think they're going to be willing to spend the years that we did? Because I felt like I didn't play well until I had been in it like 15 years.
The Outliers. You see that thing I posted the other day about The Outliers? Mm-hmm. It's a book.
Yep.
And it takes 10,000 hours probably to master anything this guy was figuring out.
Right.
I couldn't argue with that when I thought about it. And then if you could put 10,000 hours, that's like about 30 years of work, you know, into something. If you work an hour a day.
Right.
Okay. But if you put in 8 hours a day, you're going to get it down in 3.3 years. So is that a long time to really learn how to master something? I don't think so.
Yeah, but you have to put all your time to it, because I found from doing stand-up, I did stand-up at my highest probably 4 days a week. I'd probably do about 7 shows
sure.
a week. The guys I knew that would do 3 shows a night, 7 days a week, in and out, never got tired of it. Those are the guys I'm seeing on Conan. Those are the guys that have their own half-hour comedy.
Well, they love it. You got to want it.
You have to love it. Exactly.
You got to love it. You got to want it. And if you don't, get out of it. And that's the thing about, like, with me and music. Not that I don't love today's music. It's nothing wrong with it. It's just not part of me. I've had my music. I know what I like. You know?
Chris Rock once said your favorite music is the music you first got laid to.
Well, you know what? It's in there. Definitely it's part of it.
Yeah, you know what? I will always love grunge.
You see? And me, grunge was the end of the party. I remember going into Lemoore East, right? Mm-hmm. And it was like 91 or something, 91, 92. And I walked in and there were a bunch of kids. And, you know, I just broke up with a girlfriend of 5 years or whatever. And I remember seeing a bartender who knew me. And I looked around and it was like all these guys wearing flannel, waving the flannel flag. You know what I mean?
Yep.
And it was all guys, though. There were no girls. It was all guys. And they were all like, and the band is playing, and it's like, just sounds like all like kind of depressing stuff, you know, to me, compared to like Poison, I guess. And
right.
Whatever. Not that I'm a huge Poison fan, but I'm just saying, not like the party of the 80s music.
Yeah, the early Van Halen.
I'll save you
with that.
Thank you. And, you know, so. And I look at him, I go, what happened? He just shook his head like, no. And he asked me, like, you know, where's the girl? I went, no. You know, it's all over. It was like, I knew then the party was over. You know what I mean? Like,
once the girls stopped showing up?
Really? Well, the girls, people made fun of the guys, like, because they looked like girls or they were in spandex. We would all have our Aquanet. We would buy Aquanet, like, a dozen cans at a time.
I remember your big Ozone Park housewife hair.
Thank you. You see? I actually, oh my God, yeah. Well, that's, forget that. But anyway, but we used to buy Aquanet by the case. But picture the serious scenario, though. There would be like 5-6 guys, you know, in the basement over there on Sutter Avenue, right? And we were all dressed like this because we're going out at night, right? And we're all looking like this. And we're discussing Paganini, though. Mm-hmm. You see what I mean? It was like they were serious musicians.
Right.
Not that these people aren't serious, but it was a revolt. You know, it was a revolt against the party. It was like, we want to hear, you know, and nobody wants to hear, you know, whatever. It's some sort of a party or a groove thing, you know what I mean? Yep. That was something that a stripper would dance to on a pole, you know what I mean? All of a sudden, it's like, no, I just want to sit here and be depressed and drink coffee and, you know, whatever. You know?
Yeah, I always thought it was kind of harkening back to a more folk music vibe, but with
good.
Loud guitars.
Some of it was.
Because it was simple chords, catchy hooks, and
interesting. Yeah.
Deep lyrics.
Yeah.
I think that's a lot of what Kurt was doing.
Nirvana, totally. I mean, yeah. Him I loved. I mean,
yeah, well, you can't say those songs were not well-written songs. They were songwriting band.
I think In Utero was even better than the first one.
That's one of my favorite albums of all time.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I think that was even better. Heart-Shaped Box, whatever. You know, it just killed. But the problem was that then all these record companies dropped all the hair bands and drove to Seattle and signed anybody wearing flannel playing in a garage.
Right.
And then it became overblown and just stupid.
And
you know, because a lot of those guys didn't deserve it, you know?
Right. And the thing was, it was to me, Nirvana was always like my generation's Beatles, except John didn't die 20 years later.
Not at all.
It was like, where would
he didn't even have a chance this
time. Yeah. Had he lived to 2000, you know, would their music have been like the Beatles, where it would have taken totally new directions and everybody was still playing catch up?
I like Wings way better than the Beatles.
You're weird.
I have a problem. No, you know what I call the Beatles? Seriously? It's not like they didn't influence me and I didn't them. I love their movies. You know what I call them?
The prototype for Wings?
The first boy band. That's why they became popular.
No, that's why they became popular. They had way more talent than they needed.
They had a lot of talent. But they had George Martin also.
Yeah.
Who was a huge part of it, I believe.
Yeah. And George Martin was like doing Peter Sellers records. They weren't even letting him near music at that point. So there was this frustrated genius.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, everything about them was right place, right time, right guys. It was it was a perfect storm, which is why there won't ever be another Beatles.
No, they can't be. No, people, you know, that's over. It can't happen again.
Yeah.
And nor should it. I think it would ruin the Beatles. You know what I mean? I don't want it to. I don't want it to happen again. I got a great story. One time, this is what happened. I remember with the Beatles. This is, you know, you can cut this right out if you want, but it was really funny.
I'm telling you that now.
I remember being in a limousine. I don't remember why, but we were going to Manhattan, a bunch of us, and there were a couple of younger girls in the car with us, okay? And they were too young to do anything with, okay? They were like probably 15, 16 and whatever. They were going to the same show, okay? When we were older, we were probably like in our late 20s, okay?
I've accused you of nothing.
There's nothing I could say about it, honestly. But here's what happened. The Beatles came on the radio. And I asked the girls, literally, I told the guys, I said, watch this. And I said, do you have any idea who this is? And they did not know who it was. I said, that sounds nice. You know, and they were like, no, I have no idea. You know, no idea. They had no clue who it was. And I love that.
The greatest thing in the world.
This week. Steven has said he's a neophyte to music. Both Kevin and I are going to give him a recommendation for an album he should be listening to that can open up kind of a whole world otherwise.
So you can
Kevin?
Understand where we're coming from.
There you go.
I will always say my favorite live album of all time is the Allman Brothers Live at the Fillmore East.
Allman Brothers Live at the Fillmore East.
That is a great album. If you want to hear like real guitar jamming, the Allman Brothers, every summer I listen to Van Halen and the Allman Brothers. Every summer. And it's not even conscious in my head.
Yeah.
It's just like the weather gets warm and I go, I haven't listened to the Allman Brothers in a while.
I mean, you're talking about having some serious virtuoso musicians. Two drummers, keyboard player, two guitar players, and a bass player.
Yeah.
You'll like it.
Awesome. All right.
I'm going to go with U2 Achtung Baby. Because I feel like that album does everything you want. It's got crazy soundscapes that, like, you don't know what's going on. You don't know how he's making those sounds. It's got beautiful ballads. One is on that record. Mysterious Ways is on that record.
Yeah.
Wild Horses.
Wild Horses is a
trying to
song.
Throw your arms around the world.
Yeah. The last tour, they did Ultraviolet Light My Way, and I never heard them do it live before, and it made me love that song even more. So it has every mood on it. It has every kind of sound, and it's like, I think, it's interesting, because when it came out, it was so different than the stuff they had done in the 80s. There was a real reaction to it, but now that we're 20 years from it, it's the linchpin of everything they've ever done.
Yeah, okay, I guess that's interesting too, as you look back at stuff and like the impact it had when it came out, and then if it still holds that up today.
It's the same thing with comics. Like, why do we still like Jack Kirby?
Exactly, yeah. It's like so revolutionary, you know?
Yeah, this has been fantastic. I'm considering this a third birthday present.
Awesome, there you go.
I don't even have two. But Kevin, thank you for coming in.
Thank you for having
much
me.
Much appreciated.
Is there Twitter or Facebook you want people to follow you?
No, not really. I mean,
stop in
just,
at Stone Grove Guitars.
Yeah, stop in at Stone Grove.
Where's the address?
723 West Hillgrove Avenue.
Yeah, it's about a mile from Chimera's Comics.
Off Hillgrove and Brainerd. And I also live right up the street from Chimera's Comics in Oak Lawn. I went in there last week. It's awesome.
Yeah. You can always find me at 19 South LaGrange Road, LaGrange, Illinois. Yeah, Chimera's Comics.
And for the show, you can follow me at Not In My Book on Twitter. Don't forget to like our Facebook page. Give us some more reviews on iTunes. Subscribe.
Subscribe.
Yeah, we've been getting a lot of great reviews, but our hit count has kind of stayed the same. And We're doing everything we can to keep coming at you, and just tell people you like it.
Caffeinated Comics is a Not In My Book production.
Take that!